Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode 118. This is Jamie Russo. For those of you that are new to the show, I own a coworking space in Palo Alto, California. I am the executive director of the Global Workspace Association, and through my Everything Coworking brand, I use my broad industry experience to help people start and run coworking spaces that meet their personal and financial goals. And our most recent cohort of the Coworking Startup School is hard at work. We had our second weekly call this week. Got to meet some new folks and dive into floor plans and business model questions and lots of good details. Super excited about that. And on a related note, I've mentioned this a couple of times, but for anybody who's new, I am launching a community manager university, which is a training and development platform for community managers to support them from day one to growing into a regional manager. The platform includes mini courses that cover the major buckets of the community manager role, including community management, of course, operations, marketing, finance, and leadership. The content is laid out in a graduated learning path so that the community manager can identify what content is relevant to them, given their experience, and jump in at that point. And they will also get resources, templates, Q&A calls each month, and a Slack group for peer networking. So if that sounds interesting to you, make sure you get on the list to get notified when that is ready to roll, which will be in the end of September, early October. Got to get through the GWA conference first, but get on the list at www.everythingcoworking.com/community managers. Before I jump into today's guest, I will share a quick story about my weekend. So today is actually Labor Day, and instead of taking the day off, I am laboring on Labor Day. Too much going on, working on the Community Manager University, getting that ready to roll for you, and then the GWA conference is coming up September 18th, which is 2 weeks from Wednesday. So lots to do. This is always a hard time of year to be out, and had a great family trip in August. So we went this weekend with some friends to a local KOA a little bit north of San Francisco. San Francisco, like a lot of cities, is awesome. You can drive like 30 to 40 minutes and you're in farmland. So we stayed at this KOA kind of in the middle of dairy country up here. And it is, I usually prefer wood camping, as in the middle of woods with fewer humans. And the KOA, of course, on a holiday weekend was jam-packed. And it's kind of a funny place. Like, it's most people are staying in little cabins or like RVs, Airstreams, that kind of thing. Very few tents. And the place has pool and a petting zoo and a rock climbing wall and movies at night and a coffee cart and Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi was not great, but still it existed. I usually look for campsites that have no cell phone service, much less Wi-Fi. It was an interesting experience and lots of very dedicated barbecuers and campers. There was a huge group nearby our site that brought their grilling gear in U-Haul trailers, which I thought was amazing. So interesting weekend. So our friend stayed, we stayed in this tiny little cabin with just beds and a bunk bed. And then they stayed in this like duplex with a kitchen. So they had tons of space, but they had ants, like an ant infestation. They were everywhere in the food. They were getting into stuff that was sealed, getting into toothpaste. I mean, you name it, the ants were everywhere. And you have to suspect this was not a new problem. Like, the ants did not show up on the Friday before Labor Day. So my friend, you know, talked to the front desk and they were not very supportive. They came to spray one time. The problem did not improve. And so she has to talk to the manager. And the manager was supposed to meet her at her cabin and did not. So she went down to the office to try to find him. And he was super rude to her and said, you know, he wanted to meet her at the cabin and see the problem himself. And so she went back up there and proceeded to wait 45 minutes for him to show up. This is on a vacation weekend, right? She's already spent hours cleaning and dumping food that had ants in it that she had brought. So he shows up 45 minutes later and was a little bit apologetic and then asked her what she wanted them to do. And she said, well, I think that what would be fair is a credit of one night. And they were staying for 3 nights. And he said, Well, that's his response was, well, that's really steep. This is a duplex and that's really expensive. This is the manager of the place. There are hundreds of people at this place, probably thousands. Lots and lots of sites, RV sites, campsites, you name it. But the place was big. And this is the manager of a place that is in the business of hospitality. I mean, it's a campground, but like I mentioned, high amenity campground. Playground for the kids. I mean, you name it. So for his response suggesting that a credit of one night was too steep, and he said, well, I'm going to have to think about it. So he goes back into his office, and she went to the pool with the kids, and without responding to her directly, he just credited her account $100, and she saw this through the email. And the space was, it was like maybe $275 a night. A little steep, one would think, for a campground, but that's part of the point, right? So she's paying. She could have been in a hotel with a pool, but she had decided to stay there, and her cabin was infested with ants. I mean, they were everywhere. And his response was not that she was right and that he wanted to make up for her lack of a positive experience. It was that she was asking for too much by requesting a credit of one out of the three nights. So, you know, we just talked about kind of the hospitality mindset and how lacking it was and how surprising that was given the business they were in. And of course, I jumped into business owner mindset and said, well, you should have asked him if he would be comfortable with her writing a review on Yelp that mentioned the ants, because he was definitely not thinking that far ahead. And I think that in addition to us being in a hospitality mindset and being prepared and thinking ahead about what will we do when somebody's not happy with our service and asks for us to address that, but also thinking about the risks of not addressing that appropriately and having someone write a negative Yelp review. Because I said, you know what, for them, it's one thing if people are writing Yelp reviews saying, well, the pool's crowded, because it was, of course, on a hot holiday weekend, it was 90 degrees. But it's quite another to have somebody on your Yelp page complaining about ants and the fact that they did not get appropriately compensated for having their cabin infested with ants. That may be a business killer. Nobody wants to stay at a place where they're is an ant infestation, even if it's camping. We understand there can be bugs and other things, but this was like, they were overrun with ants. Totally not acceptable. So just sharing a story of kind of outside of our industry, is super important to be thinking about how we treat our customers. First of all, we can never, ever, ever be rude to someone, right? As humans, we should just never be rude to each other, period. Much less to someone who is a customer that is having an issue that is caused by your space and they're paying to stay there. So just a little bit of food for thought. All right, time to jump into the meaty content. I am super excited for today's guest, Casey Godwin. He is the president at FlexSpace Advisors, has a background in commercial real estate as a broker. He dives into his background in detail, and I talk about how fantastic I think Casey is in the episode. So I will not delay too much further. Casey will appear on the podcast for additional episodes. If there are any topics related to real estate that you'd love to have Casey dive into, please shoot me an email, jamie@everythingcoworking.com, with your request. We have a number of topics that are kind of on his list, but happy to address anything that's important to you. So I hope you enjoy this and learn a lot from Casey. I am super excited to be here with Casey Godwin today. Casey, you've been on my list. We're 116 episodes in, and I think since I've known you, I've wanted to interview you.
No, I've been trying to keep this a secret.
I know. Well, yes, we're going to let the cat out of the bag today about how amazing you are. I'm super excited to share you with my audience. I've already shared you. You're my go-to resource for my co-working startup school students, but I'm excited to share you with the rest of the audience. So I'll give you a brief introduction from my lens and let you jump in and talk about your background. So Casey is now the founder of FlexSpace Advisors. He's a commercial real estate broker, but much more than that. He's also a member of GWA Advisory Board. The Advisory Board, don't tell any of the board members, but I love our meetings. It's such a great group.
Yes.
Yeah, we got a really good, diverse group of folks who are just really engaged in the industry and see a lot. So I love those phone calls. I had to miss the last one. And Casey is going to host a Q&A, kind of a an informal bring all of your deep down questions about the real estate process and co-working at the conference this year on Thursday afternoon. That'll be in the agenda for those of you that'll be there. You'll get to meet Casey in person, and he will also be running around. If you are going to be there and want to meet Casey, make sure to reach out to him. Casey will give all your contact info in the show notes. So I'll let Casey introduce himself in a second. But the reason I am such a fan of Casey is because he is, like, I have not ever met a broker who is so dedicated to his clients and so deeply understands the co-working model. I mean, Casey has chosen to really focus on this as an industry, although he has a history of many, many transactions with famous companies like Chuck E. Cheese, yeah. which we were talking about in our pre-call chat. So he'll walk through who he works with, but when I see new operators, most of the time they don't know where to start and don't understand the process. And Casey is just the most incredible resource for that group, but he's also just super sophisticated in data models and his experience in the space. So he works with an entire range of folks in the industry. So Casey, I will take a moment from singing your praises and let you kind of give us your version of the introduction and a little more detail on what you do and how you work.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. Don't know how to go from there. So first off, I want to say what a big fan I am. Everything Co-working Podcast, it's absolutely something that I've listened to for years during my commutes in from Frisco to Dallas, Texas. I had an hour commute, and there's been no other podcast I've looked forward to more than yours. So this is kind of a dream come true to kind of be on and kind of share my story. So yeah, you know, a little bit about me. I've been in a commercial real estate broker for 11 years now. I got in the industry right before the recession. I started working with some really large companies as a office tenant rep broker. And so what that really means is I specialized just representing the occupiers of the space and did not represent any landlords in that process. So there's a little bit of a conflict-free, you know, bias that I come from. And so we're representing a lot of large companies like Chuck E. Cheese and some office groups like JP Morgan Chase and Regions Bank. And so I have kind of a pretty wide spectrum for experience on that. And then also I worked with some healthcare groups that were in a growth phase. And so we'd open like 50 new locations a year. So I do come from a background of being able to take a group that already has, let's say, 450 locations and grow them, you know, 50 per year, and now they're stabilized around 650 locations, and managing that whole process. You do have to be streamlined, and you do have to have your processes in place, and, you know, everyone has to know what their jobs and responsibilities are. So I've enjoyed that background. However, it did become a little bit, you know, monotonous. Yeah, I would work across the country, and we're in some of these secondary or tertiary markets, and, you know, I wasn't actually going out to these spaces because they were very simple transactions. Didn't require a lot of thought process. The build outs were very similar. So there wasn't any creativity involved. And same really goes with the negotiations. It almost felt like you were doing the same deal and just a different day. And so I didn't want to be involved when the Groundhog Day effect. So I actually had a referral come through to help represent a co-working operator. And I think at the time I was thinking, what is co-working? And this was about 4 years ago, and it was very new. I think on my floor of 50 brokers, no one had heard of co-working before at that time. And so I said, yeah, I'll take on the task. I really enjoyed the couple that were looking to open the first space. And I really enjoyed the creativity and the entrepreneurial spirit that they had and looking to start something new. They had a lot of ambition, but they also had a lot of drive and to get this off the floor. And so I completed that transaction. And from there, I kind of had this thought in the back of my mind. It's like, okay, this could be really something that resonates with me. I'm not really being called to any of these large corporate occupiers. And so I think on the entrepreneur side, I really was intrigued by it. I love the creativity aspect, like I said. And so I started then, you know, partner up and go and look for some more co-working operators. So at the time, Dawson Williams was a partner with me at SwearEngine. And we started going out there and putting together a list of some of the top occupiers in the co-working space and see about, you know, assisting with their growth strategies. So during that time, I had the pleasure of meeting you at Vegas for the co-working conference. And I was really intrigued with how open the co-working operators were in sharing their experiences with other operators and really furthering the cause and saying, hey, look, you know, I've noticed this in my industry or in this in my market, and maybe try this scenario with your landlord and that might work. I had never seen that in any other industry before. And so I was really kind of taken back by that.
I have to interrupt and say, I did an interview with Mark Gilbreth last week, which will air before we talk, before ours goes live. And we were talking about that exact sort of phenomenon. And we said, you know, we hope this continues. We hope that as operators expand and the industry really grows and it becomes more competitive, that we don't lose that. Because I think I was commenting on, I have to reference the conference, which is coming up shortly on September 18th, but there's a great, and we'll talk about your experience in this sort of category of deal is doing partnerships or management agreements. And we have a panel on that at the conference and it's, you know, convene and industrious. And we did a prep call and I was like blown away by some of the details they were sharing about how they think about those deals. And I was like, oh, I hope they share all of this live. And then I thought, you know, it's amazing, right? Like how great it is. Yeah.
So in Vegas, I remember, you know, having a notepad in front of me and just, you know, vigorously taking notes, you know, listening to Mara and some of the other folks that they're talking about their management agreements and some of the different deal structures that they were looking at, you know, is so different. You know, I come from a background of doing all kinds of different deals and structures, but this was such an infusion of a, you know, development deal plus like a hotel service model and, you know, this partnership model. So it was so dynamic that I just fell in love with it. So that's, you know, really the point where I decided, I think this is what I want to follow for the rest of my life.
You're calling.
Yeah, absolutely. So then I leave the Kumbaya in Vegas and come back to Dallas and I start singing the praises of everything I just learned. And, you know, everyone in my office is saying, what is co-working? They still did not get it. And so it was a great time for me because I was able to get a head start and go out and meet a lot of people and really work on my craft. And refine that process. So
with nobody chasing you because they didn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to one of my flight group members who's in Houston and he said, yeah, he's like, I was searching for my space in the pre-WeWork Houston. And he's like, none of the brokers knew what this was. And this was like 2 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my discussions with the landlords have changed dramatically over 4 years ago. You know, originally it was what is co-working and constantly explaining that to them. And now it's what makes you different than a WeWork or Industrious or, you know, Serendipity Labs. You know, what is your calling that is going to resonate with this specific landlord? And because, like you said, it's more competitive landscape now. And so you do have to find your niche that, you know, you can really accurately portray to the landlords. So that has evolved, but I actually like that because, you know, the deal structures are getting tighter and they're continuing to be more creative, but you have to know how you stack up against your competition and what your service level is and where it, you know, competes. What advantages do you have versus a WeWork? Why is the landlord going to do a deal with you and who has never heard of before and has no security, but versus doing something with WeWork? And a lot of times they want something that's local and they want something that they can resonate with that has that, you know, for us, by us kind of mentality that they can stand behind and partner with. And it doesn't have this outside brand that feels like a, you know, from out of town or it's not from here. So we don't really want to partner with it. So
the Starbucks feel, but you have to know how to position yourself to get into those conversations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the biggest evolutions when we're looking at, you know, helping a occupier find new markets. How are we going to kind of lay out the landscape of, do we want to go into this submarket? If we do, which landlords do we want to partner with? You know, a lot of it is not just the assets anymore. You're really looking at the landlords and evaluate them and their awareness of co-working, their lenders, you know, openness to doing co-working deals. Because at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. Because if they're not going to be open to something that's beyond a traditional lease, even if you're doing a traditional lease with co-working, this still takes a lot of talking and getting them to understand the complexities wrapped around the securitization. Because most co-working operators, believe it or not, there's no assets tied to a deal. Right. So securitization is one of the biggest things involved in our discussions. So, and learning how to minimize that liability. So that's something that we've refined. And I think that it's become a really valuable process for start to finish explaining. I kind of view myself as a translator and, you know, I delve in really far into the pro forma and the operating models and understand the business. That way I can take that and then be able to translate that into a landlord's, what they're looking for in a potential partner. So we can talk about the advantages and really marry the deal to there. So it's beyond what traditionally what you would think of with a broker relationship.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's traditionally a tenant rep broker is not going to be very friendly with the landlord because he's adversarial.
Right.
His interests
You're negotiating
are aligned with,
against, right.
Exactly. But, my interests are getting the best deals for my client, which are not going to be the best deals for the landlord.
Right.
But now it's more about aligning those interests.
But also traditionally, you wouldn't know that much about your client's business model.
Oh, yeah.
They just need to be able to pay their rent. You need space? I get you space. And this is so unique because Casey's done calls with me and helped me talk through, you know, I provide sample pro formas and help people think about build out costs. And I mean, he just dives right in. It's as if you've run a space. I mean, you really, really get it. And that's the thing I tell folks out there is this is such a unique proposition if you're signing a lease in particular. Well, probably in both cases. I mean, you're talking about all the complexities of doing a management agreement, which is, you know, still more rare. And we'll talk about that in a little bit, but even just, you know, how to create a business model that can, how to align a lease that can support the business model. Most brokers don't understand that at all because rent is, they don't have the same relationship with rent as we do because we're basically a rent arbitrage model underneath
exactly.
it all. Yeah.
And the way I really look at it is there's still risk if you do a lease from a landlord's perspective. If you do a lease with a co-working operator, there's risk. The same as there's a risk if you do a lease with a corporate occupier. You know, I think we've seen a lot of the really large groups that have failed in the past that no one is truly safe. So, you know, there is no 0% risk element involved. However, there's a bigger ask and there's more TI that's involved and there's less of the line as far as corporate liability.
Right.
You know, some of the original deals I was working on with, let's say, JP Morgan Chase, you know, we would just, when the question came up about securitization, they wanted to understand what the creditworthiness of the tenant, we would just send them a stock ticker. And that was
totally.
That's the end of the discussion. So, you know, that was fun, but we're not there with the co-working operators. And so you have to get involved and you have to be able to explain their business model and why we think it's going to be a success.
And you really advocate. I mean, you're like a translator / therapist /
sales, champion.
Business model analyst / I mean, that's the thing that I think is really unique about the place you're in. So kind of just to back up, give us sort of the three buckets of folks that you spend time with and help through this process.
Sure. So I work with established operators that are growing regionally. And let's say they have anywhere from 4 to 10 locations. They're really kind of staying in their region, but really want to expand. And so we're looking at growing their network in a way that makes sense, both by location, but also by the commerce that's driven between these two locations. So there's reciprocal access, and it's not just a monkey throwing a dart at a map. So we take that growth experience from my background, and we help them kind of evaluate how fast do they want to get there? Where do they want to grow regionally? Do they have national ambitions? And then where does that make most sense? So from that standpoint, then I'd kind of put on my data demographics hat and say, okay, let's look at all the MSAs across the USA and let's see how they stack up in these
MSA, Define.
Metropolitan statistical area.
Like major markets, basically, right?
Yes.
Kind of, yeah.
DFW, Houston, you know, San Francisco, those are all going to be MSAs. And, you know, it gets a little complex because the different people have different qualifications for what an MSA is. But essentially, it's the greater regional area around these metroplexes. So we look at the underlying demographics, and then we also look at the underlying competitors who are in that market and the fundamentals for the office product. And it's, you know, class A, class B traditionally. And how are they doing vacancy-wise? How are they doing in their rent growth? How are they doing for the underlying business segmentation? Are they growing? Are they stagnant? And where are they in the cycle? If you're doing a lease transaction, one of the worst things you can do is tie in a long-term lease at the top of a market, and then you kind of totally skip over, you know, the correction or, you know, pending recession when the real opportunity
lies. Because you signed a 10-year lease and you totally missed the, I know.
Yeah.
You skipped over the top. It's not simple. I remember when I went to business school and met my husband there, and he's super analytical, and he was a stock analyst at the time. And he's like, okay, so the whole model is like buy low, sell high, and hope you just have to time it exactly right. And yeah, and
exactly.
Like, yep. That's it. Yep. Yeah. By the way, even what you're talking about here, when you know, I've sort of thought of this, your process as typical, and it's not. So you walk me through your process, and you've shown me some of this data, and it, you know, makes complete sense to me. And obviously you need all this data to make good decisions. And then when I work with my co-working startup school students and they say, well, I have a broker and he's also a CPA. And so he's helping me with my pro forma. And I'm like, okay, well, tell me about the market demographics and how many people in the, you know, market are self-employed. I start asking some of these questions that you've sort of trained me to think about. And they're like, oh, well, he doesn't have any of that. And I'm like, what? You know, I just like, well, how can you possibly move on? Which I think is important. I mean, there are going to be folks who maybe don't need the same degree of data as, you know, when you're helping, you know, established operators move into new markets, and it's more about the data and where to go versus the couple that is passionate about starting a space in their neighborhood to, you know, serve it. There's maybe less data there, but
there is. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, when I am working with new operators, which, you know, the people that I get to work with from your co-working operating school, I mean, that's one of my cherished things that I love to do because it's helping someone fulfill their dreams and start from the beginning and seeing them kind of go through the whole process and, you know, open their first space. That's more fulfilling than anything I do. So I love that aspect of it. Yes, there is a lot of steps in the process and a lot of education and a lot of, I won't say quote unquote handholding, but you do have to work with them differently than someone who's been, you know, a real estate manager for 10, 15 years and they understand the process. So with that, you don't need as much data demographics. They probably already know the general area they want to be in. Most times it's because they live in that general area vicinity. They want something that's convenient for them. But then, you know, I kind of take my fiduciary responsibility really, really seriously because I don't want someone who's going to take the only $200,000 that they have in their nest egg and throw it into an investment and see it not succeed. So I take a lot of pride in working with them to make sure that, okay, there's as much due diligence that we can provide to know that we've turned over every stone and we know that this is going to be a very, very successful location based on the local demographics and based on the market demand for co-working space and based on the partnership that we created with that landlord, because we want that to be, we want to marry them together with someone they're going to get along with the next 5, 7, 10 years. So I think it's really important. So with the new operators, it's a different mindset. What we're going through, it's a little bit of a slower process because a lot of times there's a lot more of the due diligence we need to do on the front end. And some of that would entail, like, you know, putting together a pitch deck. And I know you've talked about that in the past, but I think it's really important for a co-working operator to be able to demonstrate what their vision is, not just verbally, but something on paper that someone, the landlord, can share with their asset management team and say, okay, here's our co-working model. Here's our target members. Here's what our projection would be. And from that, we're also going to pull in some market data to support those, you know, projections. And then we're going to put together a pro forma that depicts a very compelling reason on why the landlord should take a risk on you. At the end of the day, doing a lease transaction with a new operator that you don't have those three key elements, it's very difficult. At the end of the day, it's going to be whether the landlord trusts you and likes you and believes in you. It's hard to do if you're just giving them, you know, lip service.
It looks like that's particularly true in markets that are becoming more saturated, because to your point, they want to know, how are you different? And then also still in, you know, we have a lot of members of the Coworking Startup School that are still the first people in their markets to open a space.
Right.
And those landlords are still in the what's coworking stage. And so they need that to understand, okay, you're not a hair salon and you're not a typical, what are you and what does this model look like? They need to get comfortable.
Right. I think it's good for the landlords, but also it's good for the operators to really define their target of who are they? What do they want to be?
Module one.
Business plan. Yes. And moving forward. And, you know, if you don't have some of these fundamentals in place, it's hard. You need that firm foundation of knowing who you are. Because I've seen many groups that you get multiple locations in and they're still trying to figure out, who am I?
You know, who do they serve? How are they different? Yep. Mm-hmm. And that has become so much more important even over the last couple of years, just because of the competition. You can no longer be, you know, just top in the search results. You have to have, you have to be unique and exactly.
Right.
We won't go too far down that rabbit hole, but I think you and I are both passionate about, it's just fundamental to the business model and future success.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, there are other brokers out there that have done office transactions before. Can a standard tenant rep broker who's been in the business a couple of years, can he do a lease transaction? Yes, he can do it. Can he do it in a way that's going to safeguard the co-working operator from any potential pitfalls in the market or any exclusivity issues within the building, or learning what to look for? I think there's going to be some potential hiccups there. And so I think it's really wise of an operator to be very scrutinizing on who they're going to pull in as far as their team to go out there and grow their business. And that team not only is just a broker, but also attorneys and CPAs, but someone who's specialized in that line of business. And because you can't have jack of all trades. You know, it's like some people that I've heard that will have residential brokers representing them in a commercial lease transaction. Can they do it legally? Yes. You know, responsibly, I think it's going to be harder because they don't know what they don't know. And so I think that for me, it's that same process. If I was to go out and buy, you know, represent someone who's buying a house, could I do it? Yeah, legally. But I don't think anyone wants me out there going to find them a house. I think someone needs to be specialized in that specific area, in that field, and they can really give you good guidance on that. So that's my suggestion, is find someone who's really specialized in what they do. And, you know, really a separate point of what I do is not just real estate, but it's, you know, sometimes some people think about it as you're an expert in a certain area. And that, for traditionally, that's been how a commercial real estate separates himself. I'm an expert in this submarket. And that was before the commercial MLS system kind of expanded. And now you get a lot of brokers that are working outside of their markets. So as the internet has grown, it's become a smaller world. There's more of a need and demand for specialization. So now what I kind of look at myself as is more of a master broker. So I specialize in knowing how the operations work and what are the drivers for the business model. And then I go and find the best local operators in that specific market to help with the site selection or the landlord relationship process, all going through the filter of, you provide that local knowledge and fuse it into my process. That way, it's not a handoff. You're only working with one person, and that would be Casey Godwin. and, you know, that could be very confusing. In the past, I worked with different transaction teams, and there was a handoff, and clients would get confused, and they would say, well, this person did it this way. Why are you doing it a different way? So I don't think that's a really efficient model. And so I think it's better to have one point of contact, and that way there's a reliability and a predictability and through the whole process.
It's also a big deal. You spend a lot of time with your broker, so you need to like them and trust them.
Yeah,
and have a compatible communication style. And so any sort of handoff that makes you start that process over again can be really challenging.
Well, I was going to say one more big item when you're choosing a broker.
Yeah.
Understand who they represent. Number of situations I've had clients come to me and they're already in the process of negotiating and they've asked if I could help them along. And I said, let me see where you're at so far. And then they said, well, we have a broker. Okay. And then once they find out, that broker doesn't represent them. They actually represent the landlord.
The landlord. Yeah.
And so just so everyone is clear how that process works. There's a leasing agent. Their whole fiduciary responsibility is to represent the landlord, and that's it. If someone comes without a broker, they do not represent that outside tenant. They still represent the best interest of the landlord, and their fee is actually doubled when they do a deal with someone that's not represented by another broker. Now, if that same outside tenant comes with a broker that represents them, the fee for the landlord's representative would be split with the tenant representative. And so there's not a taking away from the deal. If you have a broker, it's not like you're making a worse decision that's going to impact your deal.
So the landlord pays the fee. You don't pay to work with a broker.
Correct.
The landlord is paying that fee. And so you are 100,000,000% doing yourself a disservice to not have one.
Right.
There is no downside to having a broker. There is only upside. I mean, I get super, super anxious for people who try to do this process themselves. There's no reason not to. You do not pay out of pocket. The brokers get paid well if they do a transaction that works for both parties by the landlord. And to your point, the landlord is paying the same amount no matter what. But talking about sort of incentives, if the landlord's leasing agent gets in front of a tenant with no broker, it's like their birthday.
Yeah, because
They're incented to do the deal, and it's a heck of a lot easier to get a deal done when you have somebody who doesn't know what they're doing and is not represented. They will not necessarily be evil, but they will not do anything that's in your best interest because that's not how they're incented.
Right. And majority of the time, that same outside tenant is not looking at other locations. And so really they're putting all their marbles into one basket saying, okay, hopefully I can negotiate a good deal with this one landlord. And that's not how the process works. They need to know this competitive landscape. And one of the best ways you could do that is by having an outside broker represent you, because the outside broker, if they're doing it well, they're going to be showing you multiple properties and they're going to be negotiating multiple proposals at the same time to make sure that we're keeping the landlords competitive and honest.
Speaking of the landlords, you also support landlords, which is kind of part of your sort of unique understanding of creative leasing structures.
Yeah, so that's been an evolution in my career. You know, historically, I did not represent the landlords, and it's not because I had anything against the landlords. It's just because, you know, I was focused on my clients and growing their businesses. What we've seen is a growing demand for landlords who are interested in co-working, and they want to learn more about it. And they want to understand, how could we bring in co-working or some form of co-working as an amenity to really activate our property, or bring in that co-working space to better amenitize the underutilized space within their portfolio. So what we've done is put together feasibility studies and show, you know, what a market saturation looks like for existing co-working operators, what your projections could be like for revenue, and where that compares against like a traditional lease. So yeah, I think on that side, it's a growing segment that I've been working with. But at the end of the day, I think we're growing the cause and we're expanding this across all levels. The more landlords are educated about co-working, I think it helps every operator out there, because the next time they have a conversation with them, they're going to say, okay, I know what you're talking about. I know what your business is. Let's get into the brass tacks of what it is you're going to be doing differently and how does this benefit me more so than if I do it myself. And that's really what we're getting to. One of the reasons why I'm really excited to go to the conference this year, because there's going to be a lot of content about hospitality and, you know, how an operator can get in there and expand their business of the hospitality side. Because I view this as real estate is not a co-working operator's business. Hospitality is the business. You know, the real estate is just the means to that. So you need to have a team set in place to help grow your business, because it's very time consuming. And then the operators can grow their craft, you know, understanding the hospitality level. Because at the end of the day, That's the one piece that the landlords are missing that they don't quite understand yet.
Since you brought it up, I just did my prep call with our speaker from the Ritz-Carlton, who's doing the keynote and two workshops at the conference. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a real focus, the discussion about service levels and hospitality and how that plays into our industry. So I'm also super excited about that. Okay, so we've been laying sort of the base of who Casey is, because Casey will be a repeat guest. We have many, many things to talk about. So we have some practical topics for you today. Let's dive into new operator checklist, or maybe even existing operator checklist. You kind of worked their way through the first space, but is interested in understanding, you know, kind of the best practice way to approach expanding and doing a new space. Can you talk us through that?
Right. Yeah. I like that you really kind of clarified that, because I don't think this process is just for new operators. I've met with many groups that have 5-6 locations, and they still don't have a process like this developed. Can they still get a deal done? Yes, but it may take them a little bit longer to kind of get through the thresholds with the conversations with the landlord. So I think this is more of a refined, polished process. And I think what we talked about earlier, having a pitch deck is something it's important now, and it's only going to become more important in the future as the landlords become more educated on what co-working is, and they really want to understand what makes you different. And you have to be able to portray that.
Casey, can you, without going into, we could probably do an entire session on the pitch deck, which maybe we'll do at some point. How would you contrast a pitch deck and a business plan? Like a pitch deck, we're not talking 30 pages of detail, like document, something somebody has to slog through.
No, I'm thinking something that's catchy that someone can go through in a matter of 5-10 minutes and quickly grasp the idea or concepts for your business vision. You know, getting into all the minutia of where you came from and, you know, every single statistic that reinforces your business plan, I don't think that's always necessary. At certain stages, the landlord is going to want more information. And at that point, it's good to have a business plan, which is essentially a pitch deck that's just more, you know,
detail
built out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having that reinforced when the time is right. But on the front end, it's too much information for most landlords. They really want to quickly understand who you are, what your vision is, and is this a project worth kind of exploring further? So I think it's important to be concise and can be compelling, you know, have all the selling points up front, you know, be able to have pictures in there to show what your vision is, what the space is going to look like. And so they can kind of get an understanding of what your design appeal is.
Got it. Perfect. Okay. What else for the operator looking to?
So next step would be understanding your market. I think this is probably one of the biggest factors that any operator needs to look at. When I say understanding your market, it's essentially due diligence, but there's multiple prongs. And I say one of the biggest ones is understanding the fundamentals for commercial real estate. So most operators don't come from real estate backgrounds. Almost every single operator that I've represented in the past did not have a real estate background. So there's an education process and understanding those fundamentals, because that really does drive whether a market is going to be better for co-working or not. So some of the biggest key factors will be, or the vacancy rates in a specific submarket. You know, why is the vacancy rate higher for some properties versus others? Absorption levels. Who are the business segments that are growing in a certain market? You want to get out in front of that growth. And so we want to be in thriving, growing areas. If it's a stagnant market, no one's moving. There's no churn. So there's no new members that are going to move other than the entrepreneurs or solopreneurs that are moving out of the house. So in order to have a space that's, you know, let's say larger than 10,000 square feet, you do have to pull from small businesses that are in traditional space.
Great point.
You need to understand the trailing 3-year rent growth to see, is this rent going to stay stagnant, or is this a market that's growing higher and higher? Because at that point, you know, if someone did a deal 10 years ago and their rent is doubled, now they're going to be really looking at alternative options to get out of their existing space and find a new one. And so this is a great time for co-working operators to pull that type of member. So if we can see if it's in growing markets, that's a great predictor for, you know, co-working membership drive in that area. And the next is new construction. That shows the current amount of space that's available in a market. If the vacancy levels are low and there's high demand, there has to be new construction to meet that demand. And so if you can look for new construction, that's a great predictor for where a thriving market is. And so the next thing I look at beyond the CRE fundamentals is the competitor analysis. I think every co-working operator should know who their competitors are in a given market. That they should definitely go tour them. You don't have to necessarily seek a shop them. I think many operators are open for kind of letting you in and seeing their space, but understanding the types of space that are filling up faster. And, you know, is it private offices? Is it 1 and 2 person offices? Or is it team suites that are more in the 6 to 10 person range? If you can understand that dynamic, it'll help you figure out what your space programs are going to look like. And so that's really a key component for later down the road, but it's really going to be real important when you put it into your pro forma. So it's one of the things to kind of dive it in. You understand a little bit more when you get out and see what are the successes, what operators are doing well at, what fits your idea of what your space is going to really succeed at and really push, and what kind of segmentation are you trying to go after? Are you going after the millennials that are in an urban setting, or are you going after the more professional types in a suburban setting? So you need to be able to go ahead and see both types and be able to see, okay, based on that level of finish out, yeah, I could see in my business model, I'm going to need to put a little bit more time in there. And instead of $60 a square foot for a build out, based on what I saw in the market, if everyone else is at $100 a square foot or up, I'm going to have to up my game because I can't go out there and put an inferior product out because it's not going to reproduce more profitability. You're actually going to have a lower revenue because you're not going to compete. You're going to have to discount your rates.
Right. And if you're serving the same end user, then you're going to struggle to attract members at all. So yeah, we talk about this as a really fundamental step in the process in terms of validating who you're serving and right, what do they expect out of the space? And to your point, sort of build out rates and product mix, you know, really trying to nose around and figure out what's moving, you know, if you're, how does that relate to who you're serving? You know, if 6-person offices are flying out the door, well, is that the same person you're going to serve? And will you see that similar demand? And I think an important point here is, you know, a lot of, you mentioned most operators don't sort of come to the table with a real estate background. And so some of this homework, it's like, ugh, really like exhausting. Like, can I just skip that part? Yes. For sure, most people are going to do a competitor analysis, right? They've seen spaces. That's part of what has inspired them to get into this industry. So that's more comfortable. But some of the commercial real estate fundamentals and some of the demographic work that you're going to talk about in a minute, like this is why you need a Casey, because it's some of the stuff you just cannot get on the internet yourself. You have to have a subscription to data resources that Casey pays, you know, lots of money for. And also then he'll just do it for you. And so you don't have to do that exhausting, you know, you have to think through it with you, but you're going to kind of take the lead on some of this.
It's important to take that information and then knowing the right way to show it, that's valuable. So you can go and look at a bunch of spaces and understand how much a private office is going. But really what's important is, okay, how big is the average space in this submarket? When did they open? What's the average term of those co-working operators? Did they grow or expand at any given point? And then what types of space are they in? Are they in class B office, class A, or are they in some type of flex product? And then comparing that against the overall submarket. So then you take those office fundamentals and say, okay, this market is, you know, 1 million square feet and we only have 100,000 square feet of co-working space. Actually, that would be a really large percentage. And, you know, 10% is really, really large. We don't see that across many, but let's say it's, you know, 10,000 square feet. Yeah, that's probably more realistic. Most markets are in that 1 to 3%. And so you need to be able to show to a landlord, we've done our homework. We know what we're doing. The current market is, and the saturation for co-working is only 2%. And we're projecting the market's going to go to 10 or 15%. And so you could see a longer runway. If you don't put that comparison together, you're kind of just, again, hoping the landlord just buys into what you're saying, but there's no data that supports it.
Totally makes sense. Okay. Jump into what kind of demographics do we want to be looking for in our new operator process.
Yep.
Or new market process.
So there's a handful that I love. They're my go-to. There's some core ones. If you want to just get to the down and dirty, what are the most important ones that I think? Population density is one of the most important factors. And then also the growth. What has the growth been since 2010? And what are they projecting for the next 5 or 10 years? If you're in a stagnant market, again, that means no new people are moving to this area. That's less jobs moving to the area. That's less churn. So there's less membership demand. So I think we want to look at a thriving market that's growing. And then beyond that, we want to look at the work from home population. And that can be looked at through the commuters. There's different ways you can look at through the statistical analysis, but one is just work from home population. There's a percentage. A lot of times it's under 5%. But so it's not a large percentage of your overall demand. However, it's an early adopter. So that's the low-lying fruit that we need to look for. Education attainment is really, really important. And really specifically, we're looking at level of bachelor attainment or higher. So the higher the education and the higher the income, more times than not, that's the higher propensity to go towards co-working. And that's just because co-working rates are, you know, sometimes 2 to 3 times what they are for a traditional space. And so there's an affordability that needs to be factored into it. So you can't put this in an area that's, you know, necessarily blue collar because they're not necessarily looking for co-working space. In the end, they wouldn't necessarily be able to afford some of these rates that you're looking for on a, you know, per square foot basis. So we look at that and then the workforce segmentation. We want to understand the different types of businesses. You know, is it government? Is it healthcare? If so, then those two right off the bat aren't the biggest adopters for co-working space. Government, maybe a little bit, but not that much. And what we see is the biggest, you know, group that's jumping over is professional services, financial services, real estate is a great one. We see insurance, IT. So we're looking for anything that could have a consulting type of basis. So that's really what we want to go after. Again, we want to carve out retail or anything that's service level from the total workforce population because they're never going to be adopters for co-working space.
Makes sense.
Yep. Those are the key ones that obviously we look a little bit more, you know, one of the demographics that I love to look at from a map wise is daytime workers population.
Were you talking to me about that? And I'd not heard of that before. And it makes complete sense.
Yeah. Where is everyone going to work? And, you know, during the day and you can see in a hot map, it just lights up. This is exactly where I need to be. Because not only is it be close to where other people want to be, but then they may also have clients that they want to be close to. And so other people, members want to work where their friends are or their peers are or their potential clients are. They don't want to be in an inconvenient location. So it's really important to be in that high density area. So those kind of round out the demographics that I kind of pay most attention to.
Perfect.
Another one of the checklist items that we look at is just customizing pro forma. There's some pro formas out there that will start you out on the basic level and get an understanding of just how the business operations work. However, landlords, as they become more sophisticated and they're seeing more operators putting deals in front of them, they're going to see those. And so you have to customize yours to make it really stand out. And so how do you do that in a way that's not just a bunch of numbers and, you know, projections for the first couple of years. So having something that's built out for at least a term that you're looking for, and, you know, one of the first things I noticed that I was intrigued with is, you know, doing a pro forma that's really just operations cash flow 1 or 2 years when you're committing to a term that's 10 years. Well, most of the time when we look at these deals, you're maybe cash flow positive during that time period, but it's not profitable to the extent where you're really championing that deal terms. So if you want to show this to a landlord, you need to show them your highest profitability is going to be more than likely after year 4. So I think it's really important to have kind of a fully built out pro forma. This is, you know, the operator's business and they need to be really in tune with it. So I get in there and help my operators. You know, I don't really plug in, you know, different tools that other operators use. I just take the experience of what I've seen and say, okay, I've seen some different variations of this. I think this element could really help expand and broaden out and make it to where it's really compelling for a landlord to view and see this and say, I get it. I understand why I need to invest this money. I understand my risk level and I understand when I'm going to get my money back.
And from the operator perspective too, I mean, you talked about this in the beginning, wanting to really support and make sure the operator's doing their homework. Is for new operators, understanding what that break-even point looks like and when they're going to cash flow, and having a really realistic view. And I'm in the camp of being passionate about that, which is partly why I do what I do, is helping folks to go through this process and understand the drivers. And to have someone on your side in that capacity is priceless, because you know, you can look at their pro forma and you can poke at it and you can help them tweak it, and you can tell them when it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, I could look at a pro forma and tell right off the bat, if you sign this lease, that location is going to end up failing. So that, I don't want that. I want my clients to grow. I want my business to grow. And so that's really why I kind of get in there and get into the weeds and help them to refine it. And if the deal doesn't pencil, then we need to move on and find another building or another landlord.
And I think that's another unique aspect of our model. I've probably mentioned this too many times, but I had someone send me, you know, kind of a back of the envelope pro forma, and they had a broker helping them, and they were going to sign a lease, and the build out was not going to be paid for over the duration of the, I think it was a 2 or 3 year lease. It was too short. They weren't even going to pay for their build out. I mean, I was just like, wow. I mean, it's, the broker should take some responsibility for at least that basic math, and they had not.
They should. Historically, they don't, because there's never been a need to understand the client's business model. It was always a, I'll help you get the deal done, and whenever the transaction is complete, I get paid, and then we kind of part ways and we go our own separate ways. That's it. So if you're looking for a broker that's going to help you for one transaction, find that guy or girl or whoever, and they're out there, and get a transaction done. However, I really think that I'm looking for, most of my clients, we're looking for long-term partnerships. And so it starts with one deal, but we're looking down the road and saying, okay, let's do this 10, 15, 20 more times in the next couple of years and find these locations that are going to be profitable and start generating cash flow in the next 2 years. And it's going to help you pull cash flow and help future growth.
Expand. Yep, totally. Okay, what's next on the checklist?
I think the final thing is understanding the capital required for a lease. You know, hopefully you've done enough due diligence to understand what potential revenue you could generate, and then how much, you know, deal terms the landlord's going to provide, whether it's, you know, TI or free rent. Free rent is, you know, really, really important for co-working operators, because it allows you a longer runway to start pulling in revenue and not be paying, you know, burdened with the expense of rent. So, you know, that's one of the most important factors and that I evaluate when I'm looking at deals. So if we can get a higher amount of free rent and get a suitable TI allowance, and that's going to, you know, cover, let's say, half of the amount of build out that you're expecting, you're still going to have other things that you're going to need to come out of pocket for. And I really want to make sure upfront the landlord that the operators know that. For instance, operations cash flow. You know, you got to be able to pay staff during that lease up period. You know, your finish out. If the landlord's providing, let's say, $50 to $70 a square foot, but you're projecting to be at $100 a square foot, then you're going to have to come out of pocket, you know, up to $30 a square foot. So I think it's important to understand if you have that amount of cash today, or if you need to go ahead and talk to, you know, lenders and get that secured. Because the worst thing can happen is you get to a deal finalized and then say, that's great. Now I need to go figure out how to raise that money. So let's do all the homework up front. Let's get pre-qualified and know where we can pay for this. And then it makes the process a lot faster. And it provides some assurance to the landlord that you're ready to move forward. You know, built into that is those expectations of FF&E, fixtures, furniture, and equipment. There are alternatives out there for outside financing, which, you know, are available. So I think I encourage most operators to go out and look. You know, it's, it becomes a different avenue for sourcing capital. But then signage, IT, audio, visual, I mean, there's a lot of miscellaneous things and moving expenses that you may not be factoring in that you need to make sure you're aware of. Because if you're putting all your money into, let's say, the build out, and you have no more money, then how are you going to get in, be operational? So we want to make sure you're fully aware of everything that's evolved prior to opening, and you have a game plan for marketing, you know, at that point.
Perfect. Yeah, I love this. I mean, a lot of this is part of what I teach in the co-working startup school. And what I love about Casey is that he extends that and supports that instead of kind of letting that go and not, I think a lot of these details, people can get really caught up in the excitement of getting a deal done and finding the space. And we really want to make sure crossing the T's and dotting the I's and really knowing what you're getting into. I mean, as you're talking through this process, I just still have flashbacks of the first time I signed a lease and was so clueless and had a broker had no idea like what he thought it was a cool idea. That was it.
Right.
You know, I mean, well, that's as far as it went.
There's no book out there that tells you everything you need to know about commercial real estate. So yeah, it's all about experience. And even come from my background, before I ever worked with a co-working operator, you know, 7-8 years, I had a lot of experience, but never worked with a co-working operator. So I didn't know those things that were, you know, the drivers for the business, yeah, or what would not work. And so I think that's why it's really valuable to work with an experienced broker that knows how your business works, because we're going to be able to kind of navigate through some of those shortfalls. So you're not going to have the same, you know, hiccups that another operator did that ultimately wasted, you know, 6 to 8 months of time, you know, working through. So we can quickly figure out, hey, that's going to be a deal breaker. You can't do this. You know, if the building, you know, has something structurally wrong with it, or they have, you know, no parking and they have, it's not connected to any transit, how are you going to get these members to the space? So you have to have those solutions there. Otherwise, you kind of sign your death warrant.
Right. And so you're going to protect that and give them the reality check when they need it.
Yeah.
Okay, Casey, I think so. We have a number of topics to dive into in the future. And today, we went into a lot of details, but I think this is super important because we can spend time being passionate about the industry we're in and what we're creating, but we have to create sustainable businesses. And the root of that is the lease and the space and doing all the right homework to get that right. So Casey, we're going to wrap up for today, and then we're going to decide what we're going to tackle on our next episode. But you can see more of Casey at the GWA. He will be there. And what's the best way to find you? I'll put this in the show notes also.
Yep. Email address is casey@flexspaceadvisors.com. Just spelled exactly like you would imagine. And I'm always available. My phone number 469-233-6365. Call me or text me at any time.
I don't know if I've ever had a phone number handed out, Casey.
It doesn't mean I'm going to respond immediately, but I do want to reach out. So, you know, I want to say that I'm always available. Even if you have questions, there's resources out there to just bounce some ideas. You know, don't just sign a lease, you know, blindly. So I'd rather someone call me and say, hey, can we look at this right before I sign? And absolutely, you know, if it's too far down the road and there's no opportunity to be involved in a deal, I just want you to make sure you're not making a bad decision. So.
Awesome. Thank you for everything that you've shared today and everything that you do in general for the industry. And I look forward to our next episode together.
Absolutely. Me too. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.